Hello.
You found us.
Welcome to Emergency Protocol, a podcast for people who are stressy and depressy.
We are your hosts,
Denise
and Jackie Freed. That's my mama.
And that's my baby.
We are sharing our 12 steps reimagined for today's society.
And our bumpy, pothole-ridden spiritual paths.
And we're bringing you along for the ride.
This is us doing the actual work.
When the shit hits the fan, you know it's time for
Emergency Protocol.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Not.
Not good?
Not.
I'm good, not. Is that like a reference to a Borat?
Yes. Absolutely.
So you're not good?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, welcome back to our emergency protocol. This is the second time we're filming and recording with our new stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting to be doing it. And so our first step is we are not okay. We've not been okay, and we're not getting better on our own.
Mm-hmm.
So is that where you're at?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Want to talk about it?
Sure.
Since we're talking.
I don't know. I just, again, like a lot of it comes back to feeling stressed about finances and feeling stuck in that there's like not really a lot to, there's not a lot of wiggle room in there, right? And I think a lot of other people are feeling that way. And it's through no fault of our own. It's not that I'm not a hard worker or that I'm not showing up to work or whatever. And also people can't work for a variety of reasons, right? But It's just hard recognizing that I'm existing within this system that is not serving me, right? And we're all stuck in the system.
Right.
That's not really serving most people in the United States, most people in Los Angeles.
Right.
Right? Whereas I think your experience is a little bit different because you make more money than I do.
Right.
Not that you don't have expenses and whatever either, but yeah.
So, yes. And I've had times where I have had less and have had to make do with a lot less. Most of my life, actually.
Mm. You think most of your life?
Well, this is the thing about money, right? It's like sometimes when you start making it, then your expenses go up.
Lifestyle creep. That's right. What they call that these days.
And so, you know, then your overhead is, there's still a struggle no matter where you are. So
I think
it's
that's
relative.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of like, I guess, financial freedom, right? The freedom of not having to worry about your basic needs being met, right? The hierarchy of needs kind of thing. So I think there is a definite issue with people not being able to meet their medical needs, not being able to meet their psychological needs. Not everybody can afford therapy. Not everybody can afford to go to a doctor when they have an illness.
Yeah.
It's like choosing to eat or go to the doctor.
Or go to the doctor or pay rent. Yeah.
So like, you know, there's, and it's stacked. And so, we don't have enough, in keeping it to LA, we don't have enough housing. So there's a housing issue. There's not enough affordable housing. So there's not enough overall housing. And there's not enough affordable housing.
Yeah.
And then we don't really have any kind of socialized medical care for people. So, you know, having traveled to different places in these last few years, we've not experienced it ourselves, but we've talked to a lot of people who have that security of knowing that they're cared for in their basic needs.
Yes.
And then, so that makes the rest of their lives a lot less stressful when you know that the basic needs are already covered. So I knew that you weren't feeling well around some stuff and there is no place to go. So not this week, but last week, I said, you want to go to a meeting with me? I was supposed to meet my sponsor. She had to cancel. And I was like, I have a dinner resi. I'm already going. If you want to come and you decide to come to a regular 12-step meeting with me. And you don't often go to those. You've been to a few meetings that I started at my company for all kinds of people that have things.
I've been with you when you've gone to take cakes and stuff.
Yeah. So occasionally throughout the years, you've given me a cake at a meeting. But you haven't gone to a meeting with the lens of the work that we're doing now together.
Correct.
Like a regular meeting, a regular 12-step meeting. Yeah. So tell me about what you... We haven't really talked about it since we went. Yeah. So what was your experience with that?
That's funny. Like, I knew some of the, like, again, it's kind of like analogous to the onsen story we talked about last week, where like there are all of these cultural norms and like kind of rituals that occur at these, in these spaces that you don't know about until you go and you've been a few times and you like pick up the ways of doing things, right? Like there's a greeter who's at the door going like, hey, my name is like Josh or whatever his name is. And you're like, hey, Josh, I'm Jackie. But like, otherwise I would have just breezed right by him if I didn't know that, right?
Right.
And like, that's his commitment is to be the greeter,
right?
Probably for himself, but also for whoever is new and coming in.
Right. To welcome people into the space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's like some meetings, it's funny, there's like weird call and responses that happen when people are reading from the literature or whatever. And there wasn't so much of that at this meeting because it was, what is it called when you speak and then people ask questions?
It's just a speaker meeting.
Okay. Well, but normally in past meetings that I've gone to, I don't remember there being like questions. Like that, I think, is a pretty unique part of that meeting.
Yeah, because it's a beginner's normally workshop.
Yeah. There's no like interaction between
the speaker and
the speaker and the attendee.
Although, sometimes the speaker meeting will be a speaker meeting, and then there is some participation from the attendees. Mm-hmm. But this particular thing, and that's the beauty of these 12-step meetings, is that they're all different. They all have a little, there's a lot of similarity in the thing, the follow, like the same kind of structure.
Yes.
But the delivery is different in different meetings, depending on what kind of meeting it is. So that one is a beginner's workshop where a speaker speaks for a good half hour, and then the people in attendance ask questions, and then the speaker
and it was replies. Hybrid too. There was also a Zoom situation happening. Yeah. So,
which is since pandemic, that's kind of a lot of the way it is now.
Yeah, yeah, which is cool, and that
yeah, it really because it opens up meeting all over the world. You can attend a meeting in Paris, France, if you want to online
at like any hour. In theory, there's a meeting.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that was interesting, and like just from a psychology or sociology perspective, it's interesting to see that like that format and how it creates consistency psychologically, but also allows for a new experience, like thinking about what gets people showing up, what makes them feel comfortable showing up and all of that. Yeah. So that was interesting. The speaker was really great. One thing that I really loved is he talked about how he's worked the steps multiple times, right? Mm-hmm. Like, especially I think the past speakers that I've personally seen who have been men haven't really talked about that. It's a lot of like, yeah, I went through my like there's just a lot of like AA-isms that people use and cliches that they use when they're talking about like their lowest point, right? And they're just like, yeah, blah, 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 like, and not that their work isn't serious or that they haven't changed their lives through this program, but it was really refreshing to get like the perspective of a male who was continuously doing the work. Like he said that he was like on a walk that morning listening to some book or something or some meeting or whatever it was, and he had his little notebook with him and was like writing down something.
And he's like, you know, been sober 40 plus years.
Yeah.
So it's not like this is just a new practice. This has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
Decades.
Yeah. And so that made me feel better about taking the time that I'm taking to work through these steps, right? Because, again, not that you've been putting pressure on me, but as like guinea pig number one, I feel like there, I am putting pressure on myself to accomplish something with it,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just working through it at the pace that's natural for me. So that felt very validating. And also, he told a story about how he made this amends for sleeping with some guy, like one of his buddy's ex-girlfriends or something. And the guy was like, dude, this is the third time you've made this amends to me. Right?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, like, that was also validating in that, like, you can, like, maybe there's something else that he needs to do to make that amends.
Well, there was something in him that felt like he's still needed.
Holding on to
yeah.
that. Yeah.
So in order to feel comfortable in your own body and to feel like you actually have made the amend, yeah, sometimes it takes a revisiting, or sometimes it's a living amends. Like, I won't sleep with any more of your girlfriends. Like, that's the living amend is like, I did that once, but I'm never doing, I'm never sleeping with another one, somebody else's person.
Mm.
And the living amends to this person is meaning that I'm not doing this behavior with anybody else moving forward. Right. So,
yeah,
because I don't want to feel like that again. Like I, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was funny. And also I was like, man, like it must be nice. You know, they also have you, like they go through people's birthdays and have people raise hands with how much time they have. And to be somebody who was just there, like not putting any hand up because it's not relevant to me felt a little bit weird. But I had my safety blanket of my mom who stood up at like, is anybody here more than 35 years sober or whatever it was? And it was your birthday too. So. Uh-huh. I was like, okay, I'm going to hide under the wing of my mommy again at 30 years old.
It's okay.
Yeah. But also because there is anonymity in the programs, like until we flesh out what our meetings will look like or what a new version of this could be that's accessible to everybody, like I'm going to let y'all in on a secret. You could totally just go to a meeting. If you feel like you need to show up somewhere and not be alone at home, even if you're not an addict, alcoholic, whatever, Al-Anon.
I mean, the beauty of the meeting that we went to is it's a big meeting.
It's big.
So there's a lot of people
there. Yeah, that's a thing.
And you can kind of anonymously go in and sit and just absorb it and then go back out. Sometimes you go
Sometimes
to a speaker meeting and there's going to be eight people in the room and they're going to ask you to share. And then you're like, oh, I'm just visiting or something.
Yeah.
Right. So. Depends on
the
meeting.
Do people ever do that? Has anybody ever outed themselves?
In a lot of meetings, they have open meetings. So if it's a closed meeting, then you have to identify yourself as what an addict, alcoholic, or a gambler, or whatever the meeting is, in order to attend.
Got it. So I guess you could also attend those and lie about it.
You can attend open meetings often. They don't allow people to share who don't identify as whatever it is, the kind of meeting that you're attending.
Yeah.
So you just kind of...
you attend and lie about it and add it to your amends later. Just kidding. That's not how it works. It's not like Yom Kippur when I was 10 was like, oh, well, I was mean to her, but I have a day for... We have a day
to
apologize for that.
Yeah, we have a day, Mom. You don't... We don't do that now.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to that meeting. I think it was nice. I stood up and kind of acknowledged my year around the sun in sobriety. And then we went to that meeting. Mm-hmm. It was nice. And then we had a different kind of meeting this week where we went to a women's kind of wellness center.
Yes.
And it was a networking group.
Yes.
And there was a presentation and then the women went around the room and kind of introduced themselves and said, you know, what they were offering up to the group and what they needed from the group.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really different kind of gathering. So we're talking about these two different kind of communities.
Yeah. It was interesting. I mean, again, like I think... You're maybe a little bit more social than I am. Yeah, because I feel like once or twice a week you go to dinner with a friend or you have book group or you have something.
I have structured social events.
Yeah, but you still go to one or two of those and then you usually go to like one or two meetings a week.
Right.
Right? Or you and or you meet with your sponsor, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm a lot more reserved. I'm very much like a little hobbit right now. I've been a hobbit for a minute.
I'll say that is true. And you are way more social when we're in that event, like right in the beginning, like in that that space of the social, like the kind of networking time in this place that we went to.
Yeah.
You are way more open to just having having conversations with people.
Yeah, I can drop into
it. You can drop into it way faster than
I can. That's interesting. I was kind of picking up on that. I was like, okay, Mom, are we just going to keep like filling the empty space with ourselves and creeping away from people?
I don't know. I just don't like being like smooshed into a space.
You don't like sweating, I think.
Well, not only that, I don't like, I'm always afraid that I'm going to get like smooshed in talking to somebody that I don't really feel like talking to. And then I'm stuck in that physical container. Like, forced to talk to them. Like there's no way for me to wiggle out. And I feel like if I'm in a more open space, then there's space for me to be like, I'm going to go get a drink, or I'm going to like, I can excuse myself in a more natural way than if I'm tight into a narrow physical space where there's not much place to move.
Got it.
And so I don't, I feel like my fear is I'm going to be stuck talking to next to somebody who's like, you know, maybe
just weird vibes.
Let's just say that I'm going to be stuck talking to somebody I don't really want to be stuck talking to.
It sounds like, I mean, my initial reaction to that is like, maybe you need to work on your boundary setting a little bit and like enforcing, like not enforcing those, but just like enforcing your own personal boundaries around that, and finding other physical space is one way. But also like, you can still say like, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I really need to go pee. And then you go pee and like Irish exit that conversation. Yeah. Well, I guess that's not really an Irish exit, but you exit the conversation and then you can re-enter.
Yeah, I can do that. Anyway.
Right?
But so, but there's also, I mean, this is social anxiety, right? Yeah. Like when I'm in a new...
Oh, absolutely. Like we cling to each other at events at Compass retreats or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel better going into like that social place where you actually did know people going into it. I knew, I knew one person, Kim, our lovely Kim, and her daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
Barely we met, and that was it.
Yeah.
But you had a connection to the owner of the store and you had a connection to maybe a
Only one other person.
Yeah. So,
very vague.
There was still some connection to the place. You'd been there before. Yes. You've attended there, something there before. Anyway, so for me, I felt like you had a little more familiarity. Once I have familiarity with a place and I have a little bit of ownership in a place, then I step in a lot faster. But when I'm in a new situation with a bunch of new people and I'm not sure what the structure of the situation is going to be, then I'm like, I'm out here until I feel like I want to step in. And sometimes I'm out here and I'm like, I don't want to step in at all and I'm not going to. And sometimes I'm like, okay, this is a safe place. I'm going to step in. So I don't step in unless I feel safe. And so that's an interesting thing, like psychological safety of like, okay, is this a place that I want to be vulnerable in or not? And do I feel like I can be or not? And so, you know, that's, I think, a learned thing for me just from being in 12-step rooms for a long time. You know, that some, you know, we're not all well in these rooms. So it's like some places are a little... You know, better than others.
I don't really do stuff on a school night, quote unquote, right? I spent so much of my childhood doing stuff on a school night.
Yeah.
And like burned myself out so hard that as an adult, I probably do too little. And so I've been trying to lean more into like when, because I'm noticing this about myself, right? And I'm kind of being aware of where I could improve for my own well-being, I'm saying yes to more things when people invite me places.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
And also, like, as a person, when I... So the place we went to this week is owned by my former therapist. Mm-hmm. And when I first started working with her, my social anxiety was through the roof. Like, I was just coming out of school. I had just graduated officially and was like spinning my wheels, right? I was dating, I started dating somebody who I went to high school with, who had a really strong friend group when he was in high school and had maintained that friend group. Mm-hmm. Whereas I've always had a lot of individual friendships. Mm-hmm. And so I always make myself out to be othered, like outside the group. Mm. And so that was really hard for me, like showing up, even just to like hang out at his house with his friends was really hard. And like going to any kind of social event, right? Even if I was just meeting up with a friend for a drink or going to like a Halloween party or whatever, like I would feel it in my chest, right? And so I don't know specifically when that changed, but I feel like part of it was being on medication for a long time. Like it took a couple years for that to really die down. But now when I'm going places, even if I anticipate being uncomfortable, I don't have that same like physical intensity that I once did, which is really interesting. So, yeah.
So you've worked through something, which is nice, right? Like that's also like the growth of it. It's kind of, again, going back to alcohol and whatever, there's a reason that the bar is the first place people stop in a social event because everyone feels the need to ratchet down that anxiety a bit. And that's the fastest, like most dull it. Kind of like socially acceptable way that people do it is like to have a drink and then, you know, it dulls it down a bit. Right.
Yeah.
And then you can talk to people. So,
And also like continuing to show up in the same places over and over again. Like I have a couple friends who are musicians. And so when they have shows, I try to go and it's generally the same crowd that's there as well. So then it's not just like reconnecting with somebody for the first time after 10 years. It's like, oh, I haven't seen you in a couple months since the last show. How are things going? Right. But also like going back to our first part of the episode, I like a fruity cocktail. I love a glass of wine. I enjoy the like the physical taste of that. But because I'm in such a weird place, real or perceived financially, right? It's like, do I want to spend $17 on a glass of wine or do I want to just deal with the discomfort, right? Like which discomfort would I rather weather?
Right. Spending the money or having the,
or having
the discomfort of, Yeah. I mean, they're both the way they are.
Yeah. So anyways, very interesting. All that to say that we've been spending a lot of time lately thinking about what we want our in-person groups to look and feel like and what we want the like experience to be like, what elements we want to bring in from a classic AA or 12-step setting, and what wants to be new and different, right? Yeah.
So in a regular Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, they read a preamble pretty much at every meeting.
Yeah.
And it says, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. 8A is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the first part of this preamble, and it's read at it's read a lot, is that it's a fellowship of people. Who share, who are all sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Right. So the focus is on positive right? Experience, mm-hmm. strength, and hope. Like, mm-hmm. I've had this experience. This is how I got through it. Mm-hmm. And you can get through it too.
Okay.
That they may solve their common problem, which is drinking, mm-hmm. and help others to recover from alcoholism. Mm-hmm. So it's very focused mm-hmm. on specifically alcoholism, mm-hmm. right? The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. So you don't have to be sober to be in the room. You know, just mm-hmm. have to have a desire to stop. Because some people, it takes longer for them to stop than others. Mm-hmm. And they just, you just keep coming mm-hmm. back until you can stop. Mm-hmm. But it's not a requirement for the room. Mm-hmm. No dues or fees for AA membership, which is amazing because... Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say most, but I was broke ass broke mm-hmm. and I could not afford to pay dues or go to therapy.
Therapy wasn't even a thing then.
Therapy was, it was a thing, but it was like not a thing that I could afford or it was part of our conversation.
Yeah.
And also there was no like membership, like mm-hmm. that was not like, oh, okay, you have to be a member of this club. Mm. We're self-supporting through our own contributions, so we're not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. So there's no political agency, there's no financial super PAC that is funding
right.
that can influence. There's no sobriety houses, yeah. there's no treatment centers, there's mm-hmm. nobody who's saying... Like, I'm going to have an influence over how AA is run.
Right.
And so it's completely autonomous to outside enterprises. Mm-hmm. And the primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So having that preamble read, you know, and all the time, it gives a framework for the meeting, mm-hmm. right? Like, this is who we are.
Yeah.
This is how we operate, mm-hmm. and this is how you are welcome here. Mm-hmm. And that's it. You don't have to pay.
Yeah.
You don't have to be sober. You just have to show up. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're disturbing the peace and causing a ruckus and you know, throwing chairs around, then you're going to be asked to leave. But for the most part, you can stay and hang out and listen. I know I stepped away from the thing. She hates it when I move away from the microphone, and I'm sure.
I'm thinking of the listeners.
I'm sorry, like listeners. I just adjusted my body for 1 second.
Well, you can pause.
Okay.
What you're saying and readjust, and then it can all be edited, right?
That's true.
You can't edit while you're doing like this. Is harder to edit than this.
I think we should leave that part in because it's fucking funny. Because anyway. We're not professional podcasters, in case you
didn't
know.
We're trying to be, though. And I can't control my face. Like, you can kind of see it probably from the camera, but she can... I'm not guarding myself well.
That's good. Good. I'd rather us be real. So, anyway. So in the idea of us starting our own kind of groups around mm-hmm. the language that we wrote for the people that we're trying to reach who are not alcoholics, who are people who are struggling with anxiety and depression or just mm-hmm. trying to live life on life's terms, we're going to have to come up with, I think, our own preamble mm-hmm. around what it is that we are and who is welcome here.
Yeah.
Right?
And establish kind of like the format of the meeting, right?
Right.
'Cause I think there is a lot of comfort in showing up to a space and knowing roughly what to expect.
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like knowing that there's going to be a 3-course menu and the courses themselves, like the dishes themselves might change.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. you know, that's kind of...
Oh, go ahead.
No, I think that's kind of where we're at. It's like, okay, there's so many things that we have kind of in the fire, so many irons in the fire that it's hard to decide like what to do next, but definitely creating a space for people to come together to do this work is mm-hmm. one of them. Another one is us creating a workbook and kind of framework for people to at least dip their toe into doing, mm-hmm. answering some prompt questions and kind of doing some self-exploration.
Right.
And then, yeah, we're going to see where it goes next.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I think that's also really important to, again, looping it back to the very beginning, like, we're not okay. We haven't been okay. We're not getting better on our own. The on our own piece is so huge right now, society-wise. Like, I think I'm probably also a little reliant or addicted to Instagram and social media as a substitution for actual friendship,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's hard because a lot of the people that I love and want to be in communication with live far away, right? And so I can't actually, like, be with them as often as I want. So I send a lot of as I'm sure a lot of us do, I'm sending a lot of memes whenever they remind me of somebody or I'm reaching out or, you know, reacting to stuff. I am a shameless. Apparently, I think it's uncool to react to, like, stories on Instagram or, like, comment on people's stories.
Why?
I don't know, like, other than sending the emojis, but I'm in people's business all the fucking time.
I don't think it is bad, but I don't think most people do. It's so funny. I saw something on Instagram the other day. It's like, I now spend my life sending memes to the same three people in all my spare time. Did you send that to me?
You sent that to me. So anyway, but where I was going with that is that I think it's extra important right now because for a long time, people gave a lot of resources away for free and a lot of their time and expertise. Part of that was, like, capitalism driven, like, oh, you have to give something away in order to reel people in, or you have to provide something to kind of, like, hook them, right? Or people had more resources so they could afford to give things away for free. And I feel like now also the conversation has shifted to, like, what I have to offer is valuable and I can charge for certain things. So that's one piece of it on, like, a more individual level. And then on a bigger scale, it feels like there are not as many what are called third places being utilized, right? And so a third place is somewhere that's not a home and it's not work, but there aren't a lot of those where people can just show up and exist, right? The park is one, a library is another, nature, like the beach, is another, right? Or, like, you know.
Bars.
No, bars you have to pay for.
Oh, I see. We're just talking about free
spaces. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so there aren't a lot of those. Like, I think the community rec center used to be more of a thing. I think pickleball has probably brought
Pickleball has
brought people back together, brought strangers back together.
And a lot of people love it. It's not always free,
but people love it. And you can, there's, like, resources out there.
People love the community of it.
People love the community of it and get you outside and whatever.
And exercising. And it's a good thing.
Yeah. But I think it's important that we start making more of those things available to people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, to that effect, like, you know, when we were in Japan, I can look it up on a meeting guide and see if there was an English speaking meeting in Japan, which there was. I couldn't get to it. I wish I could have, but it was like, it's available. Mm-hmm. I've been to meetings in Paris. I've been to meetings in Rome. I've been to meetings in, like, there are my people all over the globe that I can drop into. And you
identify them as your people.
Yes. They are my people.
Mm-hmm.
They're just as crazy as I am with the same sort of wackadoodle sensibility and also the inability to stop ingesting whatever it is that we put in us that changes our thing that causes us to have this craving that we can't stop, right? And we all know that about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a common bond around that.
Yeah.
That supersedes any kind of politics, socioeconomics, where you're from, how you were raised, where you are in life. Like, we're in this place. Mm-hmm. We're all just one drink away from catastrophe. Right. And so that supersedes everything.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting thing.
Yeah. Because
there's not many places where you can be different and still be welcome.
Because
we're really polarized right now as a society. Yeah. Yeah. In the United States.
Yeah.
And so that is also really interesting because because that's not part of the conversation that we're having in the room. Might have it outside of the room. I might have my differences from you outside of the room and they say, like, you know, you have a great message of whatever this your sobriety, But out here, I think you're an asshole, right? Like, I can have that difference and still be friends with people.
Yeah.
It's a little harder when we have very, very different views about things.
Yeah.
And very strong views about things.
Yeah.
And some people I've like flat out had just said, you know, no, I can't. Yeah. We're so different that at this point I can't. I don't know how to come to the table with you. And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think we had this conversation earlier. Like, for me, I feel like while I don't want to be exclusionary, there are certain principles that are fundamental to the existence of so many people that have been politicized and religiousized, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
That I don't know that I'm not sure how to reconcile that, because someone, so many people can't untangle that part of themselves from their existence. Right. And so I think we have a lot of privilege in being able to say, like, yeah, you know, we can all come together and be in a room together, but that's because we're both cis.
Mm-hmm.
You're heterosexual. I'm not exactly that. Still working through that. I'm sure we'll do a whole episode on that too. Right. But generally speaking, like, that part of our exist, we haven't had to like question or interrogate like some fundamental aspect of how we exist in the world.
No, but there are specifically, like, in the rooms of these 12-step rooms,
yeah,
there are specifically LGBTQ meetings.
Sure.
There's gay men's, like, stags, mm-hmm. women's stags.
Right, because there is more specific community available in those.
So within the bigger community, there's also sub-communities.
Right.
Right, that happen.
Right.
Naturally, because you want to talk with other people who are like you. Like,
right.
Okay, well, first we have this common bond in that we almost died from our disease.
Right.
Second, now that we've survived and we've kind of found a way to not die, now we're on the this like ship together.
Yeah.
But, you know, I might want to do a shore excursion to a different place, right, with this group of people who I also identify even on a whole nother level with.
Right.
So, yeah, that's natural.
I just don't know how much, like, I am finding myself unwilling to tolerate any, like, real bigots.
Yeah.
In any form.
Yeah.
For whatever period of time.
Right.
Right. And so wrestling with that too, like, going to our step seven, right? Like, am I acting humbly? Am I acting in service of my highest and best self? Am I acting in the service of the greater good for everybody in that? And that's something that I'm kind of wrestling with.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So basically we stopped at...
finding what I'm... Yeah.
Not willing to tolerate bigots.
Yes.
I agree. I don't know that... Well...
Anyways,
except for another bigot's no one's gonna disagree with that except for another person.
So okay, maybe we're straying too far, but I think it's, and I think it's important for a resource like this to be accessible, and I want it to be accessible, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's, I think part of it is also a feeling of vulnerability too, right? Kind of like what you said, like the social anxiety piece of like not being worried, but just like the unknown is scary, right?
Yeah.
Who will show up, what they'll say. So part of it is like we're sitting in our fear a little bit around what this new thing looks like.
Right. But there's also meetings where people say stuff that I don't agree with and I don't like and I don't want to hear. And you know what? They're free to talk about what they want to talk about. Mm-hmm. As long as it's not, you know, again, going against there are traditions and there are rules around what you can and can't do. And I think that's important to have. And it's also read so that people know what the rules are, right? Mm-hmm. So if you know, it is under, the whole thing is inclusivity.
Yeah.
And there's rules of civility that are
in respect
are like, you know, no crosstalk, no there's a lot of things that are enforced as a practice, mm-hmm. and will be called out if they're broken by someone in the group who is aware of what those things are. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's that. Mm-hmm. All right. So next up, what are we talking about next time?
Next time. Well, I'm going to go meet up again. I was invited and I said yes. So I'm going to go meet up with some college friends on the East Coast. And I think I want to talk about the importance of long-term friendships, because that's something that you've definitely modeled for me and something that I want to be good at or want to be better at than I feel like I am. And I something like that's really important.
I think you are good at that. I mean, you're now almost 31.
Yeah.
And these have been friends since you were like 18, 19 years old.
11 years.
Yeah, that's you know, a long-term relationship.
Yeah.
That's a third of your life.
Ugh.
Huh. Yeah. How about that? And so it's like, you know, I have friends like that too. We'll talk about it next time, but we're going to talk about like what is it to maintain friendships, and especially when they're close or when they're far, or when you have differences of opinion, or how do we maintain our relationships in our lives, our specifically friendships,
and also in different seasons too, right? Like it's been interesting how, as I've gotten older and people start to get married and form more committed romantic relationships, what that does or doesn't do to friendships and how different people handle that. And also making sure that I'm maintaining friendships where I feel comfortable saying I'm not okay right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like I need some love.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So stay tuned for next episode.
We want to hear from you.
Find us on Instagram and TikTok at 12 Steps for Everyone. That's at the number 12 Steps for Everyone.
Please like and follow us. You can also send us topics you want us to dig into or follow-up questions from each episode.
And if you know someone who would enjoy or benefit from our conversations, please feel free to share this with them. All are welcome here.